When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Castrol CarCast on Podcast One.
You can find weird things in your car, not just petrified French fries or melted crayons. You can find live snakes, bizarre trinkets like that, stuff that makes you wonder about folks. You'll also find continental belts. Bet you didn't know they're OE in millions of Chrysler, Dodge, Ford, BMW, VW, and GM vehicles. Continental is launching the aftermarket multi-V belt with the OE pedigree. It's their OE technology series, fanatically engineered for perfect fit, form and function for 98% of vehicles on the road in the U.S. and in Canada. Continental OE technology series, multi-V belt, the belt with the OE pedigree. Get the full story at OETechnologyseries.com. That's OETechnologyseries.com. All right, yeah. Get it on. Got to get it on. Half. Got to get it on. No choice. We're going to mandate. Get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. It is CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea over there.
Hello.
What's going on, man?
Oh, man. Got back from New York Auto Show, and I cruised on over to the garage. I saw the 935 all measured up and plumb bobs and tape measures and...
Yeah.
It's a heck of a frame table that's been built for that thing. There's not one thing that's not being measured.
Yeah, the deal with the 935 is, of course, we had the big space from the center of the hub right, center of the hub left, and we wanted to fix it during the sort of downtime we have, and it appears that car had a sort of whole new front end welded onto it. I haven't done that kind of work on those kind of cars, but it really just appears that that car suffered damage in the front end and that car suffered damage in the rear end, and that they literally just took a tub from a 911 that had no damage, and it looks like they just went back to the point as far in toward the driver's compartment until the damage stopped.
Yeah.
And then just cut it.
Where it went to was, it went from the front of the car to the top of the coilovers, where a caster camber plate where you make that adjustment would be. And what was interesting is, so the top of the shock mounts they're in the right place. That wasn't cut out. Down below, the first lower control arm points were in the same place, but forward are where the front of the control arm or the strut rod connects to, and because that was all replaced, that was not welded on evenly. So,
right.
So basically the front part of the control arms or the strut rods are what is off, and it's really kind of throwing things off on the one side. And you can see the stitch on both sides of the car where they welded it up. And it's kind of interesting.
Right. So the front and the back of that car have been clipped more than once. I want to thank Kiwi and Castrol Edge and Geico for making this show possible. OETechnologyseries.com as well. I'll tell you more about these guys in a second. First, and I should say this is Castrol CarCast. The car has 100,000 race miles on it, so it's been through Le Mans four times, and it's been through Daytona five times, I think, and it's been through Sebring five times.
Yeah.
Just to mention a few, not to mention all the Riversides and the Laguna Secas and the Road Atlantis.
At Long Beach Grand Prix, I sat with Bobby Rahal for a few minutes, and he was showing me pictures on his phone of the car from back in the day, and he said, "How's it going?" And I said, "You know, you ran Rennsport, and it wasn't going straight, and we got to do some stuff." And he looked and laughed. He goes, like, "There's no way that car is straight."
Yeah.
I was like, "All right, so it needs a little work." He's like, "Yeah, that car has got a lot of racing miles on it."
Yeah, I think it Max Zapata can figure this one out, although it may take a little bit. But I think it ran Le Mans. I know it ran Le Mans four times. I think it finished three times, and the time it didn't finish, it still ran like for like 13 hours or something.
Yeah.
It ran like 185 laps or something like that. And so it, even the one time it didn't finish, it still ran for more than half the race and 100 and some odd laps. So it's got a lot of miles on it.
Yeah.
It did, I think it finished all the Daytonas and all the Sebring. So, again, when you do these races are 3,000 miles a pop, basically. Some more, some less. But they seem to cover about 3,000 miles in 24 hours or whatever that is. We could probably do some math. Like, Le Mans is like a 7-mile lap. And they usually cover, they usually cover 350 laps or 330 laps or something like that. Le Mans is like 7.6 miles or something like that. So you're 2,500 miles a pop.
Yeah.
And Daytona, I think, is even a little more than Le Mans with the straight and the bank and stuff, just higher speed, whatever. But I'm not sure what Sebring is, but they seem to cover 2,500 pop.
Yeah,
so
that's a lot.
If you got five Daytonas and five Sebrings and five Le Mans, you're up to 10,000 miles at Le Mans.
Yeah,
just literally that car has done 10,000 miles just on Le Mans. Forget about practice and qualifying and all of that. So
yeah, and the entire racing season, these cars.
Oh, Le Mans eight and a half.
Le Mans is 8.5.
Mm. I didn't factor in the chicane.
Pit row.
Yeah, well, they did take the Mulsanne straight and they did put a chicane in there, and that would add a quarter mile or whatever
now
it is.
Now it's about 3,000 miles.
What was the length of Le Mans in 1979? We'll see, because that's before the chicane. And if you want to do a proper chicane, I mean, you have to kind of, you're going to add half a mile, right? I mean, you're going to go like quarter mile that way, turn.
It'll be interesting to see.
Interesting. All right. So,
in all my experiences of running Le Mans, I can't tell you for sure.
It's a feeling.
Yeah.
The car's all,
most of it's at night.
Car's all taken apart. And we found the source of the problem, and that's like a mounting plate. And we're going to relocate the mounting plate and put everything back together. And so far, it seems like we're in good shape.
Now, but the good news is, if we're doing it this way, this doesn't mean we need to twist the tub and realign body panels and watch that windshield fire out and pop out.
Shootout.
You know, like, because now we're just readjusting the suspension mounting points, like you were saying. So
right.
I think we've got a pretty good plan in place, and Sean's measuring everything 100 times to make sure it works.
All right.
I'm seeing the two chicanes were added before the 1990 race. So... I'll try to see what it was back in the 70s.
Just see what it was in 79, would you, goofball?
What?
I know. They added the chicane. It made it longer.
Wait.
I don't need the date they were added. I need what it was in 1979 or what Le Mans was before the chicane.
All right.
Got an answer?
Not yet.
All right. Well, if I ask what year did they add the chicane, then look for that. But if I go, what was the track before the chicane, then you can do that. It'll be faster. And then we'll go back and get those other ancillary answers. Let me tell you about KiwiCo projects designed to encourage confidence and creativity. Through play, kids get to learn and experience, and all that carries into everything they do. These guys sent over a couple of cool projects. Sonny and I are working on a robot.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm doing most of the work, but he's learning, and we're experiencing together. It's the best thing a dad can do with his son is work on a project, have something to build. Hundreds of products focusing on STEAM. That's science, technology, engineering, art, and mathematics for kids of all ages, 0 to 16 plus. KiwiCo creates... It comes with everything you need for your projects. Just choose your line of crates. You get them shipped monthly, and you can cancel or pause anytime you want. Makes learning fun. Right, Matt?
Yeah. Change the way your kids play with KiwiCo. Visit KiwiCo.com/carcast and get your first crate free. That's KiwiCo.com/carcast for your first crate free. KiwiCo.com/carcast.
All right. How old was the track? How long was the track in 19 before the chicane or in 1990?
It was still 8.467.
So they kept it the same length?
Yeah. That's it. Before the chicane. 1979, it was tightened to accommodate the new Le Mans Ring Road, 8.467 miles.
So they added a chicane, which is a lot of extra drive. I mean, it's a lot more than going on a straightaway.
Yeah. And you said it was 8.6 now?
No, they
kept it the same length.
Okay.
Now, the reason it kept it the same length is because they wanted to keep all the records in place or something?
It would make sense.
I guess. So they did something to the track.
Yeah.
So Le Mans, the track, was 8.4 miles, good enough at 8.4, Max Bata, in the 60s, like when Ford and Ferrari were battling at Le Mans, it was 8.4 miles. And last year, it was 8.4 miles.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it looks like in 86, there was a roundabout at the entrance to the Mulsanne Village, which shortened the track. So maybe then when they added the chicanes, it elongated again.
Huh. All right.
Okay.
Yeah. A
little confusing, but I think what it is they went, the Mulsanne Straight was too fast. The cars got too fast. It became too dangerous. So they added a zigzag in the middle that you had to slow down
for. Takes the danger out of it.
You're right. So when they did that, obviously a straight line in the course of the chicane in a straight line was probably 200 feet. But going right, going left, coming back again, going right, that could add half a mile or more.
Yeah.
So you picture the length of the turn itself and the distance it moved this way and then came back. That would seem like it would add a lot. But somebody figured, I guess, we want the track to remain the same length because of all the records, you know, all the timing. And obviously the chicane screws with the records a little bit because you have to slow down.
It'll change the times and whatever.
But I guess miles traveled, you know, from 19, you know, the record set in 1971 and a 917, whatever, would be beat by a Peugeot or Toyota or something. And I guess you keep it the same length so you can say that.
Yeah.
So they must have...
I wonder where they...
pulled some out of something else.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Yeah. But that must be what they're doing. Otherwise, it would for sure just be a random other length. So my car would do 300 laps, like on a rainy Le Mans weekend, and maybe closer to 330 or 350 on a drier conditions kind of day. So if you just go 3 times 8, you're 24, but it's 3 times 8, 4, or three, almost 3 times 8.5. And then you go over 300 laps in many cases. And now, you're like 2,800 miles traveled each time. So it's getting close to 3,000 miles. Max Paddock can drill down on that a little. So the car's getting straightened out, and we're going to get the thing ready. We got an event. Are we allowed to talk about the event that's coming up?
I don't know if we're allowed to talk about.
Well, we're not allowed to say where it is.
Yeah.
But people know the event's coming.
Yeah, people know the event's coming. I don't think it's a secret that this car would be invited to said event.
Lufka Cult. Lufka Cult. Anyway.
Yeah.
These things are turning into big deals. I think they're keeping a secret location.
They are.
But everyone knows, I don't know, every May or whatever, they come back around again. Yeah. And all the cool air-cooled vehicles are invited.
It's gonna be great. They've always put on such a great event, and we've seen it. You know, we were there last year, then I was there a couple of years earlier, and just sort of how it's grown. I think it was at the first one,
mm-hmm.
and the most recent one, and they just do such a great job.
Adam,
yeah,
how would I find out the mile, or like how many miles, like what do you think is the best way to do this? Because
you would have to go to
Wiki.
You Google in Le Mans and then like 1979 or Le Mans 1980. You keep just changing, you know, 1981, 1982, and it'll send you to Wiki, and then you'll click on it and Wiki will send you to racingsportscars.com. It'll like pull up that page, and then they'll see the cars, like the order they finished in.
Yeah.
And then they'll show you, you know, Porsche, you know, Dick Barber, you know, whatever, Ray Hall, blah, blah, blah. And it'll say next to it how many laps it ran.
Wiki has that for some of the races as well. The Wikipedia might have 1979 Le Mans racing results, and it'll say the order, and it might say how many laps completed for each car.
But I think Wiki sends you to Racing Sports Cars. I think that's what you end up. What ends up being pulled up, and then it just has it in order from top to bottom, and it'll have like the top whatever, and then it'll go like third place finisher, and then it'll like parentheses, it'll go first in GT class, you know, it's like as you get down,
so
whatever, and then it has all the laps the cars traveled on the right. Obviously, the ones that won traveled more laps.
Yeah, so I like, for instance, I have 1979 pulled up. Paul Newman, Porsche, 935, Dick Barber, 299 laps.
Right.
So then I would just multiply that by the length and then just do that for every Le Mans.
Yeah, that one I already know. That's just like 2,500 miles. Mm-hmm.
But whatever. Now we know. Yeah, it's 300 laps basically at 8.5 miles is what we figured out.
Right. But the next year, I think when it came back as Apple, I don't think it completed. Like if you go, then you just go Porsche, 935, or you just go Le Mans 1980, and then it'll pop up again, and you'll scroll down, and it'll get down there, and it'll because it does number of laps completed, and you'll say Dick Barber, you know, 935, Bobby Rahal, blah, 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 Brian Redman, or whoever driving it, and it'll go 187 laps.
134 like, laps.
Or 134 laps. Didn't finish. So now... Now that traveled 1,000 miles or three times four, 1,300 miles,
yeah,
or whatever.
Just
that,
about half, I don't know, 11 hours of the race. 12.
Yeah, whatever that is. All right, why don't we get Claudio and Simon Greg in here? Mm-hmm. Simon is Greg's
Peter Greg's
son, by the way, Peter Perfect. You can check out, we'll tell you about them. First, Castrol Edge, stronger under pressure. Engines can lose up to 10% of performance. Due to friction, Castrol Edge with fluid titanium transforms under pressure to keep the metal apart. Stops the power from being robbed. Three times,
fool.
Stronger than leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. As per the Kurt Urban test, 5W30 viscosity grade. Edge formula always exceeds the toughest industry standards. It's Castrol Edge. A good friend, Claudio Burton, is back in studio. Claudio runs a Trans Am team. Simon Gregg is a driver, son of famed Peter Gregg. I just saw in... highlighted in Hurley, the documentary that Patrick Dempsey did. Claudio, Simon, good to see you guys.
How are you?
Good to be here.
Nice to meet you.
Claudio, your team's leading in the Trans Am points right now?
We are. Won the first two races.
Wow. Where were the first two?
Sebring and Atlanta.
And is Sebring still very much an airfield? Has it become any part racetrack, or is it just like a lot of cones and hay bales?
It's hay bales and cones still. I don't think anything has changed there since the first race that they had it, really. It's maybe some new buildings here and there, but the track itself is just an old bomber field that never really changes.
At Road Atlanta, that C7R vet of yours with 850 horsepower, what that thing topping out at down that back straight?
Road Atlanta, about 185 or so, I think. 84, 85.
That's a fast car on a very fast.
Yeah, we always got Simon covered over there.
A very fast track. Yeah, were you driving that car there, Simon?
Yeah, they pull hard all the way down the straightaway. It makes that turn 9 a curve, even though it looks like a straightaway for a low-powered car.
Right, and it's really, really takes a lot of balls on that back straight because you got to kind of figure out when it's time to back it off. You feel like you could keep going for a while. And it's also insane, speaking of sort of chicanes, that thing used to just go right over the top of the hill, right?
Yeah, when I started racing in 97, we'd hit that dip, and gravity cavity, fly through there, and then slam on the brakes before the bridge. It was a lot different track back then. yeah. A lot of these tracks.
That's the days when they had the blowovers.
Yeah, I mean, cars literally catching air and turning over,
yeah,
right?
A couple cars blew over there.
Wow, it's like stadium trucks.
Yeah, they had that at Lime Rock, too, I do believe. For some reason, it sounds familiar. Maybe a GTP car or something like that. Here's how good I am at Road Atlanta. I think three out of the first four laps, I drove off into the hot pit area coming over that hill. It just seemed to make sense.
Yeah.
Well, it is confusing because, you know, they've changed that. They call the one side the pro paddock and then the other side kind of like the, you know, club paddock or whatever they call it. And it can be confusing.
When you go over that hill, it makes all the sense in the world just to stay out wide,
stay
left,
wide.
And then you blink your eyes and you're like, oh, I'm going off this track.
Yeah, you're like, nobody else did this. What's going on?
Well, last year you did the MIDI, right?
Yeah, you have to go out and pretend like something's wrong with the car. Oh, yeah. You have to sit there for a minute and pretend like you're doing something.
But then blow it off. I thought it was a thing. Yeah, it's fine now. I'll keep going.
It's down now. Let's keep going.
Let's just keep going, yeah.
So Claudio's out there with his team. Claudio is a guy. Are you a chemist by trade, like a polymer chemist?
Yeah, kind of. I don't have an official degree, but I apprenticed, you know, a long time under my father, who had a chemical engineering degree from Argentina that, you know, really wasn't ever accredited in America. You know, you get a degree sometimes in other countries, and then, that's no good. I don't care how hard you studied and how well you did.
Yeah, because America didn't make any money off of it, or whatever the country didn't make any money off it. So we're like, it's fine.
And Simon, so Peter Perfect, Peter Gregg, famed Porsche driver and driver of everything, who was highlighted in the Hurley film. Did you see the doc?
Yes, I enjoyed getting to be on the dock, and I've been working with Sean Cridlin. He's working on a new book about Brumo's story, and I'm out here to race Fontana this weekend, and then I just finished racing Thunder Hill the weekend before last too.
And what are you driving?
In a C7R.
You are C7R.
Yeah, and TA. Okay.
Is everything out there in Trans Am 1 basically the same horsepower and the same tube frame and the same suspension, same tires? We know that.
Yes, they're all about the same.
So TA is the big class, right, the high horsepower class. And what cars are in there? There's the Camaros, Corvettes, which are pretty much the same, just a little bit different body.
You've got a couple Challengers out there now, too.
There's Mustangs are good, and we run with TA 3 and 4 production-based cars. And then, of course, TA 2 runs by themselves.
I'm trying to think if I've seen a Challenger in full tube frame.
I don't know if I remember seeing it.
Boris drove one last year in TA at Indy. And I think Road Atlanta
is so the book. How old? So I mean, tragically, Simon's father committed suicide. I think in 1980. You must have been young.
I was 16. Younger.
Oh boy, that's brutal. Sorry to bring that up, but it's in the doc, and the doc is really pretty fascinating. and it sort of does Hurley Haywood and his early connection with Peter, Simon's dad, and then how they were like pretty much an unbeatable race team, and the crazy Brumos Porsche days, and they were sort of unbeatable back in the day.
Hurley's still a friend of the family, and Hurley's Brumos boss, Dan Davis, is building a nice new car museum back in Jacksonville. That's going to be a good place to visit. You know, my dad's favorite last car was a 935. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing yours.
Mine's all taken apart. But the Brumos, tell us what you know about Brumos. I mean, it's so iconic. The livery is so iconic. People picture them not only the 935, but maybe even more so on like the RSRs and the stuff that was naturally aspirated that Simon's dad drove and many people drove. Was Brumos a dealership?
Yes, it was a dealership in Jacksonville, Florida, and they started off selling Porsches and then Mercedes and Lexus now. But in the early 60s, Peter started racing and put Porsche on the map in the United States. He had a good relationship with them, and he started painting his cars red, white, and blue, and they're always beautifully prepared, reliable. The Daytona 24 Hours was his best race. He had good luck there, winning four times overall.
Yeah, that's and a great color scheme, because while they were red, white, and blue, it was sort of the shade of red and the shade of blue they chose that seemed to be more effective, like from a color scheme standpoint.
I always wondered why the number 59.
Well, Dad was in the Navy back then, and he flew out to a aircraft carrier once, and that was the number of the ship and the font, that big blocky font is where he got that from.
Oh, wow.
I love an answer to a question. I would Paul Newman's cars are all like 33, and I was told that they make them 33. It could be easy to change the 3 into an 8. Or, with a piece of tape, piece of white tape. So if you showed up at the race and someone else had the 33 or the same number, you could easily modify, be 88 or 83 or 38 or whatever it is. And I was like, that made sense.
Yeah.
Like it was satisfying. So, Claudio, are you doing any driving these days, or it's all team running?
Well, I guess mostly team running. But I'm looking forward to get back in the car. I had kind of engine reserve. I had some hip surgery, which I'm almost about 100% from. So
you're going to get back in and drive?
Yeah, I get the bug once in a while. I want to go do it again.
Is the car the same as when I drove it a couple of years ago?
We rebodied to Camaros.
Oh, that's right.
You were saying the Aero was better on the Camaro body than the Corvette.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think so by just looking at it, but I guess you guys kind of got it stretched out and a little bit lower and...
It's got a little
Camaro-y?
Less frontal area.
Yeah.
They kind of, they do look like the street cars, but we do, it was built after the C7 Corvette. So every time you build a car after another one, usually you learn a little bit more about the air and things like that.
Who builds the bodies?
These are built by a guy, Kerry Hitt, out of Pennsylvania, company ACP. And kind of builds the carbon Kevlar bodies for everybody.
So everyone gets the same mold and the same body.
If you buy a Mustang, you're going to get the exact same thing as a guy racing the Mustangs.
Right.
There's a one pretty much authorized body manufacturer for TA right now.
I'm curious who – I've always been wanting to run down this gentleman, Max Zapata, and maybe you could do it when we did our race at Willow Springs, and there was that fella who drove your second team car.
Oh.
And I think the guy's name was, I want to say
Richard Wall.
Richard Wall.
Yeah.
Got to find that guy's name. He's out here, right?
Yeah, but he's kind of got like some issues that he's in out of the country right now.
Oh. Kind of makes sense.
Every April, that seems to happen to a bunch of people.
He's on a vacation for a while.
Yeah. It's a lot of vacations around April, mid-April.
Yeah, he's hanging out with Roman Polanski for different reasons. Either way, they're probably hanging out of the country. Well, he's an interesting guy because I guess he was just there to do a vintage race in his Cobra, right?
He blew up the diff.
And his Cobra broke.
And he didn't have another one.
And so he's like, well, I want to race. So he just showed up at your pit?
And we had an extra car sitting there that we had brought out. So, yeah, we cut a deal, and he was pretty good.
He came in second.
Yeah, he drove pretty good.
Yeah.
No, he obviously
did you know him prior? Like, what's the vetting process? You write me a check, and well, we're good? Go?
That was pretty it for that deal. Yeah. Yeah,
all right. Brave move, buddy. Yeah.
Well, if a guy's out there, and he had a real Cobra.
Real Cobra, yeah.
Yeah. That's
guy's out on that track. Driving a real Cobra,
yeah,
he's probably got some chops. I mean, I'm assuming in a vintage
I
race,
the same thing, you know, those right? things are diabolic to drive. And right, if right. he's driving that kind of car, he's going to be pretty good.
Yeah, so and the real Cobra kind of means his check's going to be good.
Yeah, it's not going to bounce right.
Tell that to Uncle Sam. So,
well, at least we thought so. But
so, I was always curious what that guy's. How that all came about. It was as I heard it that he just broke his Cobra and then he showed up and he was like, I was here for the vintage race, but I still want to race and I don't got an extra diff, you know, independent and all. Mm. What kind of rear end did those Cobras use back in the day? Because they didn't have a lot of independent, you know, people would use Jag stuff, yeah. I think, in cars like that.
Yeah, my guess would be it's a live axle, kind of like what we have.
I don't think it's a live. I think Cobras are... Cobra.
Maybe some Dion kind of thing from yesterday. Or
Cobra, you know, if you think about it, they had knockoffs and they had, I think, an independent rear. I'm almost sure they had an independent rear. So
well,
a lot of times people would use Jag stuff because Jags had knockoffs and Jags had independent rears. Like what knockoff hubs do we have? I mean... With independent
the
rears,
center
you know?
Section could be an 8.8 or a 9-inch center section, and then whatever Cobra, whatever they made for the, you know, for the suspension and then the half shafts and the hubs at that point. And I know what you're saying. There's a lot of Jag stuff because it's all one unit. You can swap it in, but maybe they just made their own.
Maybe
they made their own. They must have gotten sort of.
Yeah, that's probably why it blew up.
They got that rear end somewhere. Yeah. Cobra rear end max bad on a 66 Cobra or 64 or whatever it is. They came from Bristol
yeah.
with probably an independent rear because they were like European sports
cars. Do you think they used
no,
all of that?
No, because it wouldn't handle the horsepower.
But maybe they just replaced the center section. Maybe they went to like a 9-inch Ford center section and then left, you know, the...
I don't know about the center section. You have the transmission... You have the drive shaft, and then that goes to the rear end.
Yeah, the
right?
pumpkin, basically.
Right, so the pumpkin is the one that needs to be
Yeah, that
heavy
would be
duty.
Beefier. That would probably be a Ford 8.8 or a 9-inch. I'm not sure what other options there would have been.
9-inch, but independent?
Independent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So not all 9-inches would have – you could have a 9-inch Ford rear end live axle or just a center section that would have half shafts. You know, you can
right.
make, you can make it into anything.
So they just made it into that.
I think
they wouldn't have been able to find it back. There was nothing American. There's no Ford with an independent rear.
Yeah, I don't know if there was a Ford with a 9. Maybe something in the racing world.
They must have made their own own inserts. All right, tell me about Geico Max
Battles. Right.
Drill down that. Claudio, you thought that was a live axle on a Cobra? Come on, man. You say you're a car guy.
Yeah.
You're a good engineer.
That was my worst guess, I guess.
You only had two options. Everybody's got a to-do list. You drop off dry cleaning, you pick up some milk, and now you can save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that list, and you don't have to drop off or pick up anything. You just go to Geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. So if you want some extra money in your pocket, this is the most rewarding to-do you can do today. Be sure to check out Geico.com.
So I had a fun experience when I was able to drive that C7R, which is a delight to drive, I would say. Like, it was a nice, nice car. I had a couple memories. One is... The hose for the water bottle was planted on top, put in this nipple and pushed right on top of the sway bar adjuster, which made me think he had a hydraulic sway bar adjuster. That's all I thought. I never asked anything. I just saw a hose going to the top of it. It was really literally just a holding place for the hose.
Yeah.
Yes, I was impressed in how you did at Willow Springs. Weren't you catching Tommy Dreese and getting faster the whole time? I missed the West Coast races last year, but this year I'm trying to do most of them.
I was hanging with Tommy Dreese. Maybe I was catching him a little bit, but I wasn't much danger of me passing him, I don't think. But I certainly was on whatever the lap he was on. He'd be a few hundred feet ahead of me. And then the next lap would just be the same distance.
Lap times were real close. They were pretty close.
It was Claudio. All praise to Claudio. A, for setting up the car, and then B, for asking me if I had a radio in my helmet, and then me going no, and then him going oh, and then he went, "You didn't bring a radio?" And I was like, "No, I don't have one. No one ever asked me." And then he went and got his radio out of his helmet. And he stuffed it into my helmet. And then he said, but you won't be able to hear me while we're racing. You can just hear me during, like, yellow flags. And so during the yellow flags, I guess I'm used to vintage racing. Like, in yellow flags, everyone just kind of slows down. And Claudio was yelling, go, 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 go. Like, during the yellows, like, you got to go. I mean, you can't pass anybody, but go, man.
Yeah.
And he was yelling, go, and I was inspired by Claudio's words. And so I was able to kind of catch up to the front group.
Yeah, tighten it all up.
Once we got it tightened up, I was kind of able to hang out there for the rest of the race. Now, one thing Claudio neglected to talk to me about was how the tire... I knew how the tires were going to kind of go away. That I was prepped for. But I wasn't prepped for how much downforce those things made at high speeds and how the tires would come back via the downforce.
The faster you go, the grippier it is.
Takes a lot of confidence to trust the car in a high-speed corner.
What I was doing was I was going up at Willow around that horseshoe or wherever the Budweiser thing is at the top, and the car was like sliding all over the place. Like, you're really turning that wheel. You know the feeling. Yeah. Around 80 miles into a 100-mile race, it like starts feeling like really greasy. And then everyone got back on it, like coming down out of that horseshoe, and the car was still sliding around a lot. And I was just behind Tommy and Richard and maybe another guy at the time. And everyone's just driving the same car. And those guys were just going into that big turn eight over there at Willow, and they weren't slowing down. And I was like, man, seems like you guys should slow down because we're all going right off the edge of this track.
And you know what? We never really had the car set up for turn eight that well either. I just didn't have a whole
something
lot of
something he neglected to tell you on your radio.
Didn't have a whole lot of time. But that really is a corner for, you know, a Trans Am car, a little Formula Ford or, you know, Atlantic, something like that just goes through there. You don't even think of lifting. But in a TA car, it can be a handful.
So I was like, well, these guys are driving the same car essentially that I'm driving, and they're not slowing up too much on this corner. So I don't know why we're all not going into the desert, but they know better than I know. So I'll just stay with them.
Yeah.
And
follow the leader.
I could never figure out until I got out of the car why we weren't sliding around. Because I don't, in the vintage car world, if you're racing a BRE 510 or even one of Newman's Z cars, the whole downforce stuff doesn't really come into play. Like, it's not something that's ever really worked on or discussed. You know, you're driving a BRE 2000 Roadster Datsun, mm-hmm. you know, from 69.
Yeah, we got that big rear wing on the thing, too. You know, that's the main device that gives us most of the rear downforce.
But the new Camaro body even has more. So you go to Fontana, right? What kind of speeds will you look forward to on that straightaway going into the bank?
About 180. It should remind me of Homestead, Miami, a track I race a lot back home. You know, I'm kind of a roval specialist. I haven't raced at Fontana much before, so I'm looking forward to learning it. The last time I was here was on a test day like 20 years ago.
It's just as beautiful today as it was 20 years ago.
The town, the people.
Yeah, everything's gorgeous. You're going to be blown away.
It's majestic. Yeah.
Shades of brown everywhere as far as the eye can see.
Screw Laguna Seca. That's the place you go. Fontana. Fontana is, you know, big, long straightaway, fast, big oval. I mean, big bank turn, left hand, fast. And then big... sort of half a straightaway in the back, And then you better get down super fast because you got to get into the infield and everyone almost comes to a stop turning left into that infield. So that's kind of where the action is over there.
I'm going to like it. It's fun not running the same tracks over and over again. You know, we used to run the West Coast tracks all the time. Now we're, you know, back out here and, you know, I love Road America and Daytona a lot. You were talking about Le Mans earlier. And Mossport, we don't race there anymore. That was one of the classics. I have the track record there.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, minute 15.
In a what?
In a TA car, Trans Am.
Wow.
That was done from about 5 years ago on the Goodyear tires.
What I think we were on Pirelli's.
Pirelli, yeah.
Back when I did it.
Yeah.
Apparently wasn't set up right though.
What? Yeah, I think you're gonna like Fontana. The infield's kind of cool. It's all flat and everything, but there's like a couple of fun spots on that track, and some asswipe will knock over a cone inevitably and like get it flung out in the middle of the track at some point. Let's hope to avoid that.
I like the videos of Daytona before the chicane because they would go through the banking like at over 180 and drift into there. And I hear the big cars would leave a boat wake for the little cars that would make them jump around.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy that they would have, again, like I'd have like my 69 2000 Roadsters on that track probably with some 917s or something. That's a... It's a little difference in speed.
You're talking about Le Mans. That's a cool track. I went there once when I was 5 years old. So it's kind of a long time ago. I'm looking forward to maybe running some more vintage races in the future, you know, when I get time for that.
For TA, what's the schedule after this? After Fontana, where do you guys go?
Lime Rock.
Yeah. Lime Rock. They really just kind of go from one coast.
Wow, how far away can you get from Fontana,
there's
man?
There's nothing on the way.
There's a month in between, I think, or so, for Memorial Day.
Oh. Yeah,
they got that big tradition over there that they race on Monday after Memorial Day.
Tell us. I got to look into that. Damn it. Let's see. Somebody was – whose radio show did I do over there? Dick Barber? No, not Dick Barber. Skip Barber.
Skip Barber.
I think I did Skip Barber's radio show. I think he said he was going to be at Lime Rock. He said, come on down to Lime Rock and Memorial Day or Labor Day, whenever my birthday is, I can't remember, end of May. And he said, we'll get you set up with the Trans Am car over here. And I was like, oh, okay. And then it turns out I had something to do in D.C., but the D.C. thing kind of fell apart. So now I got to maybe take him up on his offer. I got to figure this one.
You could fit it in. Trans Am has a great schedule. We hit all the best tracks all over the country.
Well, Lime Rock for me is super cool because it's Newman's home track,
yeah.
Which I love, and Sam Posey and all that kind of stuff, and Bob Sharp, and you think about all those names over there. Also, it's smaller. It's probably the smallest track of the season, right?
Only 1.5 miles. It's pretty simple. We don't use the chicane there either.
Under a minute lap, right?
Like yeah, about 50. 51 seconds.
Wow,
would be qualifying.
Not for me. But it's still not super high speed and technical and whatever. Like you don't want to cut your teeth at Road Atlanta, but you might give it a whirl at Lime Rock. So maybe I should get hold of Dick Barber. I mean Skip Barber.
Yeah.
See what he's got to
say.
But
you mentioned the Newman Sharp stuff. Now, Claudio, you built a tribute car?
Yeah. Yeah. Over
what'd you build?
Over the winter. A Nissan, you know, to the like the GTU.
Like a 240?
Like the Sam Posey?
It's like a 240, yeah. 240. A little bigger engine than the 240. It's 280.
You did the full Geno's body on it.
Oh, here's a picture of it, right?
Is that it or another one?
That looks like it. Yeah, just like that. That's it.
Yeah, so it's a really cool look. It's the Sam Posey, Geno's, GTU sort of big flare, big body. I had one, not an original car, but like a tribute car as well. It's a great looking piece. Like, it's probably the coolest looking of the Z.
Yeah, it really is.
Cars.
So what engine are you, what did you end up putting?
This car has like a 2.9 liter, a little stroked and punched out a little bit.
Okay.
With the triple Mikunis.
50s, 44s, 48s.
44, triple 44.
So you got the side drafts in there, and you got the header and everything else. And it's just a fun, good-looking, cool
nice
car.
Job. It's a good-looking car.
Are the carburetors on the same side as the exhaust?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Yes, they are. I can tell you they
Keeps
are.
Keeps them nice and warm. Yeah.
You want that. That's what you want. You want super hot fuel. That's what you
That's
want.
That's what you want.
You want heat. That's your friend. Yeah. I know. I don't know why. God damn it. Datsun always drove me nuts with that. I mean, the good news is the starter's super easy to get to. It's just on the other side all by its lonesome.
You know, it's a very simple engine at the end of the day. You know, it's when you take the valve cover off, lashing valves and things like that, the cam's all exposed right there.
Yep.
It's pretty basic, good little engine.
Yeah, and it at a 2.9, create a good pull. And if you ever see...
Do you know what horsepower you're making with it?
I think the car to the wheels made like 260, 250, 260 to the wheels.
That's healthy for a naturally aspirated motor. And if you see a guy like John Morton drive one of those cars around Road Atlanta or Laguna Seca or something, man, those cars fly.
Yeah.
Like they work.
They do. A friend of mine named Greg Ira, he runs an orange 240Z in E-Production, and he really hustles it around against, like, the Mazdas that have a little advantage because they're a little newer.
Yeah, it's racing this weekend at the MIDI, so, you know, came out here, hang out with you, do a show, and then catching a flight back to the MIDI and see how it goes.
Now, will the MIDI allow tribute cars in and that sort of thing?
I believe so. I believe so.
You'll find out when you get there on the weekend.
It's entered and he's doing it. So,
John, you know, it was really impressive when we were there last year that John Morton in his BRE sort of tribute car, although it's well beyond a tribute car, it's got so many of the original pieces from the BRE Z car and everything.
Yeah,
on
that's
it.
Randy's car.
He blew up. He literally like punched a hole in the side of the block in that thing and let a whole bunch of stuff down on the track right at the end of the straightaway, by the way. So some poor guy in a 510 just didn't stand a chance. But anyway, they brought that car in on like Thursday afternoon or something, and it had a hole in the side of the engine block. And I was like, what are you guys doing? They're like, we're going to find a short block. We're racing. I'm like, where are you finding a short block? We're out in the woods. You know, like, we may know a guy. And they found, I think, a pretty rough, rusty short block.
Yeah, it was not pretty.
But it had the crank and the rods and the piston. Everything was in it. I guess it worked. It just had been sitting out for a while. God bless those guys. Like, in the infield, in a parking lot, they put that thing up on jack stands. They dropped everything. They pulled off all the, you know, exhaust and intake and everything else. They took everything off the
one
car.
They basically built the engine, like, on the tailgate of a pickup truck.
In the parking lot. And when we came back the next morning, they were like, we're going. And they were good to go.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's what I love about racers.
Yeah.
I really do. I love that spirit. Everyone helped out.
Yeah, we had a deal like that at Road America last year. Blew three engines during that race.
Wow.
And ended up...
Everybody blew an engine that weekend.
it was crazy. And we ended up putting one back together again about 3 in the morning from spare parts from two of the ones that were blown up that were alike. And Tommy Drissi drove the car and it actually made it to the end, which was, you know, everybody like, this is never going to even make two laps.
Yeah.
Three laps. And man, it made it to the end. So we did that last year on the
stack of tires. Hill a couple weeks ago, we ran TA2 fuel by accident and that made our motor blow up because it was only like 98 octane instead of 110.
I was going to ask, did everybody run the wrong fuel accidentally or was there bad fuel at the track?
There was some questions about the fuel
if
at
people,
that point.
Like so many people blowing engines, maybe it's fuel.
What do you guys run in Trans Am 1 fuel-wise?
110 octane leaded. And the TA2 cars run 98 octane unleaded.
Unleaded. So that makes a big difference. Well, the spirit of the racer, baby. It's alive. guys working on stuff in the parking lot. I, by the way, I get out of the car and like one of my driving gloves has a hole in it. I'm like, there goes the weekend.
Now, give me a beer.
We're done. Give me a beer. We're watching. But that's me. Claudio Burton and Simon Gregg, the guys are going to be out at Fontana this weekend. And by the way, check out GoShare. You can check out GoShare.com. I think that was...
GoShare.co.
Oh, .co. Sorry, yeah. .co. That was on the side of my Trans Am car. I had a great time. Maybe we'll figure out a way to get out to Lime Rock.
Don't forget, Laguna Seca's on May 4th, 1 p.m.
Oh, man, yeah. Laguna Seca.
I don't know if we're going to make that.
Well, hey, we'll put a deal together now that you're talking Lime Rock, man. I want to see you back in that car.
I'm all ears and thumbs. So I'm looking forward to that. And Laguna Seca, ooh. God, there's just so much to do. All right, my stand-up special, Not Taco Bell Material, you can check that out at Chassis, two S's and a Y, and iTunes and Amazon, everything else. Live shows coming up all over the place. Oh, we going tonight, Sacramento, Thunder Valley. That's right, man. Mm-hmm. I'll be doing a stand-up show tonight. If you're in Sacramento, come on out to the Thunder Valley Resort and Casino. Have some fun with us, and then Brea and Denver and Portland and West Palm Beach, all at AdamCarolla.com. Claudio and Simon are going to be at the track this week, and then they'll check out. If you're going to be at Road Atlanta for the MIDI, cheer for that Geno's wide-body Z car. Check out BurtonRacing.com as well for the schedule and all the stuff you need. Simon, any plugs for you? Anywhere you want anyone to go?
No, that gig at Thunder Valley sounds like the name of a straightaway or track. You know?
The gig at Thunder Valley. So, and Matt, you got check out Shift and Steer, available on iTunes and Podcast One. Yep.
Yep, thank you.
And until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Claudio Burton and Simon Gregg and Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.